Welcome to Legacy Fundraising Chat, where we talk about everything legacy related to help you as a fundraiser generate more interest amongst your supporters in legacy giving. I'm your host, Sunita Gudu, founder of Persuasion and legacy marketer, providing consultancy, training, coaching and interim legacy support to small to medium-sized charities. I'm delighted that the National Free Wills Network is sponsoring my podcast. They allow you to offer your supporters a free solicitor written will anywhere in the UK, and the charity receives full measurable results. With 15 years of experience and over 500 million raised in future income for charities, the network can help charities of all shapes and sizes launch and maximise their legacy programmes. To find out more, visit nationalfreewills.net. Hello listener, welcome to episode 39. This is a two-part episode with Thames Hospice, a charity based in South London area, and one of my clients who I've been working with in a few different ways. I've been really impressed with their appetite to try new marketing channels. And in these two parts, I bring you the how, why, when of what their activities have achieved and are predicted in the future for legacy income. Here's my interview with Jane Simmons, Major Gifts Associate Director at Thames Hospice. So hello, Jane. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Sunita. Thank you very much for having me.
Oh, you're so welcome. You're so welcome. So for the purposes of our listener, as this podcast also has listeners from across Europe and the US, that they may not have heard of Thames Hospice, so could you tell my listener what the organisation does and who supports your organisation?
Absolutely. So Thames Hospice is a hospice based in Berkshire. We've been running for 37 years now, and we're part of a big hospice movement around the UK. There's about 250 hospices around the UK, and we provide end-of-life care and palliative care. So for those people that have been diagnosed with a condition that they won't be recovering from, so whether that be a cancer or a heart condition or whatever that may be, and they need more intensive care, and it's not the kind of care where you're going to sort of get better from it. It's more about palliative care. That's where we step in. So we'll then take over from working with the GPs and sort of NHS and hospitals. But when we provide that sort of palliative and end-of-life care and comfort for patients, just to make sure that they have got everything they need, that they're free of pain, the families are being looked after. So we have support for people at home. We have a hospice on site. People can come in and spend time with us on site as well. We have a 24-hour facility. And then we also provide things like physiotherapy, counselling, complementary therapies, and all sort of that sort of wraparound care that you need to make sure you're being supported.
Absolutely amazing. And I imagine that round-the-clock support and the support at home is something that's hugely valuable and must have been so much so during the last few years.
Absolutely. I mean, the hospice movement itself is only about 50 years old. Right. So it's quite a recent phenomenon, being able to provide that palliative care and support for people at the end of their lives. And especially during COVID was an awful time for many, many people. And we were worked very closely with the NHS to make sure that those people that needed our care, that we were there for them. Mm. So going into people's homes is something that people don't realise that hospices do, but it's actually the biggest part of what we do. Mm. And for every person we look after at the hospice, we're probably looking after about 10 people at home. So it's going into their homes, making sure that they're comfortable, making sure that the families understand what's happening and that we're there for them. Mm. And that we're not getting in the way. We're allowing families to be together, but we're providing that support so that families that have become carers can turn back into being family members again, and just spending that really valuable last few days or few months or few weeks, whatever it may be, with their families.
Thank you for sharing that, Jane. And when you talk about a movement of hospices, does that mean you're part of a larger network, or are you an independent hospice?
Each hospice is independent. We are an independent charity, mm-hmm. but we come under the umbrella of Hospice UK, which is sort of the national picture for us. And hospices work very closely together. So we're all doing the same thing in our own little patch. The hospice sector works very closely, interacting with each other. So we have other hospices in our area that patients or families may move in between, depending on what care they get. And actually the fundraising sector, which is obviously where I am, mm-hmm. works really closely together. So again, we're all trying to do the same thing. So we have a hospice income generation network. Mm-hmm. So we all get together and chat about what we're doing and share ideas and share best practice, mm-hmm. Which is really fabulous. And you don't see that a lot in the charity sector, I don't think, and that we're all trying to work together for the same thing because we're not really encroaching on each other's patches, so to speak. So it's really nice to be able to be part of a bigger network. So we're all fundraising for ourselves, but we're also looking after each other, which is really nice.
It must be amazing to have that support, especially because your cause is, it's naturally very sensitive and you have to be very careful with your messaging. And of course, your job is very difficult indeed. Do you want to tell my listener a bit about how you raise money for the organisation?
We fundraise in lots of different ways at the hospice. My particular role there is the Major Gifts Associate Director. So I look after the fundraising income from major donors. Mm-hmm. So any individuals giving over a certain amount. And trusts and foundations. We have an amazing trust and foundations fundraiser who raises money from that area. And then obviously legacies as well is a really big part of my area. So when I first started at Thames Hospice, I actually came in to raise money for our capital appeal. And so we were raising money for a new building. We'd sort of outgrown our old building. So we ran a really big capital appeal, which raised £6 million over 4 years. And we used that as a catalyst to create a major donor function within the hospice, because that's something we hadn't really done before. So we grew our income from trusts and foundations, from corporates, from major donors, from around, I think we raised about £70,000. And last year we raised £1.5 million. So we've really grown that sector quite well through using that sort of capital appeal as a catalyst. And now Gifts and Wills sort of sit in my remit as well. And it's not always sat within my remit, sort of moved between teams within the hospice. But I think it sits nicely with me because it's all about building relationships. It's about stewarding those people and making them feel really special and important. So it's very similar to major donor fundraising in building relationships with people. And that's what I love about it.
Great. I mean, it's not unusual for legacies to be that hot potato where it does kind of move around in various departments. But I hope you're going to hold on to it, Jane, because
I hope they do. I really enjoy it.
Yeah, that's great. Obviously, we've done some great work together and it does feel like it sits very seamlessly within the major donors, as you mentioned, from the capital. And it's really lovely to hear that it's organically grown from something very different. And I think it really shows that the legacy part of it is really, as we know, the ultimate gift. But you don't start with legacy fundraising. You start with building those relationships, which is what you've done. And then it's grown into a whole income stream that is incredibly lucrative, which leads me on to asking you how much of your legacy income is attributed to your overall charity income.
Last year, our fundraising team raised about £5.5 million. And of that, £1.2 million came from Gifts and Wills. The year before that, it was about £750,000. So it does fluctuate quite a lot. But we work on sort of an average over the last 10 years, which is about £1 million. Wow. So we budget each year for about £1 million. And then we hope that we get those nice random big gifts on top of that.
Yes, of course. And I suppose because you have been getting legacy income for a period of time, you are able to forecast and have that benchmark and go, okay, it might be slightly under £1 million and that's okay. We can live with it if it's 900,000, but in future years, it might be a little bit more. But rather than year on year, which unfortunately I see a lot of charities do, and see, right, we've had 1 million this year, let's go for 2 million next year, 3 million next year. But actually, we know it doesn't work like that.
No.
And it can take between 7 to 10 years to actually build a stronger pipeline before you can actually be really bold and say 2 million is now our benchmark. So it's really good to hear that you're not putting yourselves under huge pressure, and that really pleases me as well, because I
do want to get to 2 million.
And I want you to as well. And I suppose it's being realistic, isn't it?
Absolutely.
To be in line with your longevity of your organization and your legacy marketing and all that's going in the right direction. So, I mean, that is a substantial amount of money, 5.5 million and even 1 million to a relatively, I would say, a small hospice in that your geographical area. Why do you think people choose to support the hospice in this way?
So I think traditionally hospices have received quite a lot of income from gifts and wills. We, you know, we look after people at the end of their lives. Mm. We're in people's thoughts at that point in their lives. They do remember us. We're an NHS type service, but we are funded by charitable donations. Mm. And so people want to support us in that way. And I think the health sector in general is quite positive in terms of its legacy gifts. It gets quite a lot from legacy gifts. Mm. But I think one thing we have noticed, and talking to other hospices and to sort of the national sector as well, mm. is that our growth of market share is actually slowing a little bit.
Right.
And I think we now need to be doing more marketing in order to keep up with others.
Right.
So one thing we've actually seen over the last 10 years is that bigger charities are ramping up their marketing. So it's something that we are looking at as a collective within the hospice sector,
yeah.
to try and make sure that we don't continue to lose any more market share, because we need to be really careful about that. So I think traditionally people have supported hospices in this way, and lots of people choose to, mm-hmm. but I think we need to not be lax about it. We need to be really make sure that we are definitely pushing on that marketing and making sure that we're telling people that we do need gifts and wills.
And one of the things that I've seen with yourselves is that you're very open to diversification and looking at different channels, and you are right. And I think the important thing as well is not to compare yourself, obviously, to the larger organisations.
I think
it's so easy to look at what these large organisations that are doing that have got 20 within their fundraising department or even in their legacy department and kind of compare and despair, really. But I think in terms of your growth and what you're doing, and you know, I'm seeing that you're making huge strides. And I guess there's such a time lag, isn't there?
Yes.
From your legacy marketing to when things actually come to fruition. Mm. So I think it's kind of accepting that you're never going to see the fruits of your labour in the next yes. few years.
That frustrates people a little bit sometimes.
Yes.
That's why legacy isn't for everyone. I actually like that part of it. I like thinking that the work you're doing now is going to pay off in the future, so that you're so kind of leaving your own legacy behind, aren't you?
Yeah.
You're doing all this work, and that hopefully, you know, once you've moved on, whatever, in 10 years' time, that it will come to fruition. You will see the fruits of your labour. So I like mm-hmm. that part of it.
And just leading on to that then, are you seeing in the time that you've been there, that link between your legacy marketing and legacy income? Or does it feel as if actually that's not quite happening right now?
No. Yeah, I don't think we're seeing it quite yet.
Okay.
So I think as far as I can sort of see from my time mm-hmm. at Thames Hospice, we kind of started doing more legacy marketing in about 2017.
Right.
So that's only, what, 6 years ago?
Yeah.
So I don't think we're seeing the fruits of our labour just yet. But I'm hoping in the next couple of years we will start to see some things coming
yeah.
through. We have slowly been ramping up what we're doing. The hospice itself, I mean, the people within the hospice are starting to think a bit more about it, and the trustees are more on board now. Mm. And it is a slow process getting to that point. Mm-hmm. And we've still got a long way to go, but I think we've seen quite big jumps from where we were 6 years ago in terms mm-hmm. of what we're doing and pushing our legacy marketing message out there in the community.
That's great. And I suppose when you've got this force behind you of this Income Generation Hospice UK you were referring to, that actually you can be saying all these other hospices are doing this, and therefore it's totally okay to talk to people about gifts and wills as a hospice. And I think Absolutely. That's probably one of the challenges, isn't it, is that people don't want to talk about death and end of life, even though most of your staff are talking about end of life most of the day.
Yeah, it is a huge challenge, even though we are talking about it every day, like you say. People don't necessarily want to make that jump between what someone is going through and then sort of monetizing it in any kind of way. So it's about helping people to bridge that conversation and realize that it's not about necessarily about money.
No.
It's about helping the families on their journey. And a lot of what we do is about doing that, like gifts and wills or in memory giving or any kind of giving we have. It's about helping those families give back to a charity that helped them. And so it's quite a privilege to be part of that journey. And I think it's just helping people to understand that that's what we're there for.
And you've mentioned in-memory giving, which I think we would naturally expect to be a lucrative income stream for a hospice. Is that the same for you?
Absolutely. It's our second biggest income stream.
Right.
And it is definitely, it's a huge part of what we do. And most people that give immediately after they've lost someone, it is in memory giving. So it's a huge part of what we do. And as I said, it's part of that way for families to be able to continue their journey. It's part of their grieving process. So it's quite a privilege to be part of that for so many families. And there's a lot of links between in memory giving and legacy giving as well, isn't there? They're kind of our warmest supporters for our gifts in wills. So that's the people we want to be looking after and stewarding really, really nicely, and making sure that they feel part of what we're doing, and that they stay with us part up after that initial in memory gift, as they stick with us and support us post that as well.
And it's really great that you have recognised that legacies and in memory giving or fundraising is really an organisational effort. It's not something that should sit with just you and your team. And I was keen to get you on the show because we started working together, it was last year, wasn't it, 2022? And you approached me because you wanted to do an in-house staff e-learning module. So what kind of inspired you to want to do that?
We've spoken a lot in our department about external communications, about whether we should do things like radio and TV ads, getting out to the community. But I think it really starts at home. So I think that internal engagement piece is really, really key. Our amazing medical staff spend all day with these families and patients, and they're the ones that get asked the questions. And we can go and talk to people, but we don't spend day after day with them. They get to know them. So by encouraging them and giving them the tools to have those conversations, I think it's so much more powerful than us trying to put a message out into the community about it. So, you know, door drops and appeals are a part of what we do. It's our bread and butter. But if a nurse is talking to a family and they are asked, how can I help? And that nurse is able to say to a family, well, you can fundraise, you can donate, you can leave a gift in your will. That's so much more powerful. And I think it has such an impact. So our job is to really help those staff to facilitate those conversations. So I think that a training module is just a part of that process. There's always lots of things we can do to support our staff, and we try and do as much as we can. But I think the training module is kind of, I guess, a starting point.
Yeah.
To try and dispel some of those myths and make it feel like a more normal part of the conversation.
And I suppose when a family's saying, what can I do? It's a practical thing that they want to do, isn't it? It's often, I want to say thank you to the organization that has been there for my loved one. I guess what you're doing is giving your family's choice. And that's the important thing, isn't it? It's not particularly directing and going, actually, here's a tribute fund, do this. These are the ways that people choose to support our hospice. And you're welcome to do any of these things that you felt right for you.
Absolutely, yeah. So we have a memory tree, we have tribute pages, we have gifts and wills, we have opportunities to do challenge events. So there's lots of different ways people can help, and people choose what works best for them.
And so we worked on the module. What did you kind of decide to include, or what did we decide to include, and how did you find the process?
It was an interesting process because it really made us think about what was important. And we started talking about including lots of different fundraising types. And then we thought, actually, that's probably too much information. So we really focused on in-memory giving and gifts and wills. Because we thought they're the two areas people were most keen to talk about and possibly have struggled the most to talk about as well. So we really focused on those two areas, and they really go hand in hand. So we did things like we provided some interesting stats about how much we raise and what that pays for within the hospice, the importance of those income streams, the different ways that we give. So as like I just said, the memory tree, tribute pages, and how it helps families on their journey. And then we talked about some helpful tips on how to have those conversations. So when someone says, how can we help? We don't want a staff member saying, oh, no, there's nothing you can do. The service doesn't cost you anything. We're fine. We want them to say, well, there's loads of different things you can do, but you do what's right for you. And these are a few of the different things that you can do to help. Or even just, let me get a fundraiser for you. Let me find someone who can talk to you on coming in and finding us if they're not comfortable to have those conversations. They're just trying to give people the confidence to be able to answer that question in a very positive way.
And what I really liked about the decision that you made is that it was just going to be a light touch, a light introduction. Because like you said, a lot of your staff are naturally protective of the families, as they should be. You really didn't want it to be, right, this is how you start a conversation and we want you to include legacies and in-memory giving at every opportunity. And it wasn't that at all, was it? It was more about when the family approaches and says, actually, what can I do, that your care staff don't panic and think, oh my gosh, I'm really not skilled to have this conversation. I don't feel confident. And that's what I really liked about your decision around what to include in the module. And actually, I facilitated and made sure that happened.
Yeah.
But you weren't trying to do all things. And no. I think from that perspective, I imagine that it's landed really well.
I mean, I hope so. These guys all have day jobs. They're doing an amazing thing. It's a full-on job. We don't expect them to do our jobs.
No.
So it's just about giving them the confidence to be able to answer the question and find the right person to have those conversations with. So like you said, a very light touch, just helping people not feel scared about having those conversations and introducing us. So we put ourselves on the videos as well, so they get to know us.
Yeah, sorry about that.
No, that's okay. That's something you just have to do.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're all in there. We all sort of introduce ourselves about who we are and what we can do to help. And as I said, it's not the only thing we're doing. So as well as having the module, we're going down and chatting to people and chatting to staff, and we go and join team meetings and we try and put ourselves out there a bit more so that we're visible. We just want people to come and talk to us, really. And so if they're having a conversation with a family, they could go, oh yeah, I'll just get Jane or I'll just get Alice or whoever it is that maybe they want to talk to, and that we're very approachable, which I hope we are.
It seems like you've really raised your profile as well within the organisation. Not just from doing the module, but just by putting yourself out there and going, look, we're available here. It's an open door. Come and talk to us.
We're trying to instill fundraising in every part of the hospice and everything we do. And a big part of that is making ourselves available. So all of us as fundraisers spend some time trying to work in other departments for a couple of hours, helping out with lunches or whatever it may be. And they're really good for us to do that. And it helps us to understand what they do, because obviously what they do is amazing and it's not what we do. But then it helps us to be in a situation where they can then ask us questions. So it starts that conversation and gets people to get to know us. So yeah, it's a lot about raising our profile as well, so that we're visible, we're there, and that we can step in and have those conversations when we need to.
Listener, that's all for part one. Do tune into part two, released on the 13th of September. Thank you so much for listening to Legacy Fundraising Chat, brought to you by Persuasion, a consultancy training and coaching organisation helping fundraisers just like you. Thank you also for everything that you do for your cause and the charity sector, making it an inspiring place to work. I'm your host, Sunita Gudu, championing your legacy fundraising efforts.